SaaS's application level logging, which is a whole different beast from endpoint and network for sure, right? And you have different latencies, right? And you have different requirements and expectations that are coming from the SaaS vendor, right? As a user of their platforms, you're not really in control of what's being emitted, right? Like you can't go in and deploy something into their environment to emit more metrics like you can with an endpoint. So that's a different beast.
This is the Detection at Scale podcast, a new show designed to help security practitioners succeed at managing and responding to threats at a modern cloud scale. As the volume of data increases and the attack surface expands, it's never been more important to stay ahead of the curve. Each episode will feature interviews with leading security practitioners, thought leaders, and company founders who are building the next generation of security tools. I'm your host, Jack Naglieri, founder and CEO of Panther Labs. Now let's get into today's show. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Detection at Scale. Today, I'm here with Drew Gatchell. What's up, Drew?
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. We were just riffing about traveling back to the East Coast. We're both based out of DC right now. And yeah, it's winter, so leaves are falling. There's snow on the ground. It's a little bit different from California, what I'm used to.
Yeah, the weather has been wild this year so far. So it was nice to have a little bit of snow today.
Yeah, that was surprising for sure as a California person. Well, great. It's really exciting to have you on. You have quite an interesting background. So you started out in the military and then you worked in the private sector and you're still there right now, obviously at a startup, which is really exciting. And AppOmni has been doing really well from what I'm seeing and really excited to talk to you about that. So the first thing I want to sort of pick your brain on that we were just chatting about is, you know, you started off in the military and then you went into private sector. And with that, I'm always curious, like, what were your like big takeaways on making that transition? Because, you know, I think a lot of what happens in military gets translated into cyber. So I was curious if you had any interesting lessons learned that we could talk about first.
Yeah. You know, on the military, things are very, I don't want to say slow moving, right? I think the private sector goes much faster in organizational change, pivoting, right? You know, at least, you know, in terms of strategic terms. So, you know, things that you need in the private sector, you could make a quick argument, or, you know, in the government and military side, it's, you know, things are the way they are. Turning the ship wheel goes much slower there. So for me, that was my biggest takeaway, making the transition. You know, on the cybersecurity side of things, there are a lot of parallels for sure. You know, I think organizational the way teams operate, very similar. The paradigms that you learn in the military translate pretty well to the private sector, at least on the cybersecurity front of things. You know, just the makeup of how teams operate. Obviously, red teaming historically came from kind of the military background. So, you know, having those translate over wasn't surprising to me, right? But, you know, at least on the cybersecurity front, it was exciting to see that those things translated pretty well.
When you say red teaming, can you talk more about that? I mean, do you mean in terms of offense versus defense, or do you mean in terms of like testing our own defenses?
Testing our own defenses, really, right? Like, I mean, you talk about, you know, there were books written years and years and years ago, right, of leveraging SEAL teams and whatnot to red team, you know, our own defenses, right? You know, just to see that same logic, that same concept applied in the private sector of using offensive engineers to, you know, test our defenses and learn and, you know, essentially purple team has translated really well.
Yeah, that's a good segue into talking about cyber. So, you know, going from military into cyber and in the private sector, what frameworks are you really thinking about right now when it comes to detection engineering? Like, what do you subscribe to?
I'm a big fan of like Palantir years ago came out with this alerting and detection strategy framework. Really, really big fan of that, right? Started with that hypothesis and just riffing on that, right? Riffing on that in terms of concept before you even start writing a rule, right? Or writing detection logic, right? Having that written down on paper and really going down the detection as code path of, you know, a proper engineering team concept for detection engineering. Whereas, you know, I think when I started out in this field, detection engineering was kind of very ad hoc and kind of shoot by the hip, right? And I think detection engineering in the last few years has really taken off as a concept and properly treating it as an engineering function. So for me, like operationalizing detection engineering in that way is my big thing these days.
Yeah, ADS is really interesting. And I like that it takes a very holistic approach.
For sure. It's definitely, you know, it has its gaps and whatnot, right? But it's, you know, for me, it was a really strong starting point And I think organizations could take that and riff off of it and apply it to their own internal systems.
What do you mean there's gaps? What have you augmented it with?
So we've augmented it with doing basically attack graphs and security decision trees. That's the name I'm looking for. Basically, the concept of taking an attack graph and applying, you know, detection concepts or blue team operations or mitigations to the attack graph and thinking like an attacker and figure out how they would riff as an attacker if I was aware of this detection and I wanted to avoid it, what would be my next path, right? And just building up this tree of decisions and then applying that into identifying what detection capabilities should exist or what are the mitigations from a defensive posture that you would apply.
Yeah, graphs are pretty interesting when it comes to detection and response and forensics as well, right? Just trying to understand the kill chain and the sequence and then working backwards into, okay, what detection capabilities do we build on top of that?
Yeah, most definitely, right? I mean, they always say like, you know, attackers think of graphs. I don't think that's necessarily true always, but, you know, I think defensively, there's a lot of opportunities there from looking at it from a graph perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think attacks happen in graphs. I don't know if attackers think in graphs, but like,
right,
that's certainly how they unfold, right? It's like, well, you know, I went from this point A to point B, and then I tried to go to point C, but it didn't work. So I went back to B, and then I went to D, E, and F, right? So it sort of traverses through this cyberspace. And then we as defenders need to be thinking about, okay, what's happening and how are we plotting these sequences and getting the right signals along the way?
Most definitely.
How do you think about signal creation? So if we talk a little bit more technically, I think there's a lot of layers to detection engineering, and sort of the first most prominent layer of that is like the initial signals that represent something that's security relevant. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think signal creation is one of those things where I like to start with a hypothesis. Start with an initial hypothesis and really apply the scientific method to figure out like, all right, what's possible from a data collection point of view? How can that translate into building a detection? How can I translate that into, am I collecting the source? Am I collecting the different attributes that I need to build a detection? And also similarly, I think detections can be layered, right? You have defensive depth. I think you can have detection in depth as well, right? Like overlapping signals, all detecting the same thing. That way, if you have one signal that goes out, you know, you still have other possible sources that will alert kind of on the same activity, which leads to downstream concepts of, you know, automating, right? And you have automation that applies and minimizes and correlates those different signals together.
The redundancy in signaling, that's super interesting. I've never thought about that. How do you go ahead and do that? Is it log differences or is it just different analysis?
A little bit goes back to, you know, kind of thinking graphs and figure out, all right, like if an attacker is going to take this certain graph, what are the different detection opportunities along that specific path in the graph and apply detections there, right? Also, you know, it could be different sources, right? You know, you have your EDR source and then you could also have a different source on the endpoint that also detects, or a network source, you know, see that's alerting or triggering on the same similar activity. So that way, if your EDR agent goes down for whatever reason, you still have that network activity that can kind of trigger on that same concept, on that same TTP, right? So if you just think of it that way, right, you have these different layers kind of all alerting on the same base activity, and suddenly, you know, you have pretty comprehensive coverage.
No, that's super interesting. And I think there's a lot of practical use cases there too, especially when you think about a remote world where there's so many variables you no longer control. I think the redundancy can be really important.
Oh yeah, definitely, right? Like, especially as you get into, you know, SaaS land where you no longer control your source signals, right? Like you're beholden to whatever the vendor's providing you, you know, figure out those different layers, right? Figure out what gaps they have, right? And figure out how you can layer your defenses on top of those gaps to, you know, trigger detection is pretty critical.
Yeah, it's interesting the position the SIM plays, because I think you can think of the SIM sometimes as just an aggregator of alerts. Because if you think about what we're doing, we're installing a bunch of controls, like, you know, I'll plug App Omni, right? Like, it's a perfect example, right? App Omni is doing its own analysis that you're managing, actually, in real life.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, there's folks like you who are specialized in a certain type of security. In this case, it's SaaS security. And it really feels like I'm plugging App Omni and I'm really not trying not to. But this applies in networking too, right? It's like,
yeah,
Zeek. It's the same concept.
Yeah, it's pretty universal across products,
yeah, and
across domain spaces. Yeah, I know, right?
And then you have the combination of like the signals that come from the sensors and then the analysis that comes from the sensors as well. And it's not always the same. Like some sensors are just, it's just data, but I think it's more common actually for there to be sensor telemetry and alerts. So CrowdStrike's a great example of this. Zeek and I think Circata is also a great example of this, where they're kind of doing both and they're giving you like really curated alerts and signals that the security teams need to really fill in that piece of the plot of like, okay, we have coverage across this part of the kill chain. This is where these tools fit in. This is where these others fit in. And then, you know, we can do what you were suggesting, which is building that redundancy and signaling and filling in those visibility gaps.
Yeah. I mean, at least from my experience, it certainly exists on the SaaS side of the house too, right? Where you have like Salesforce and GitHub, you mm-hmm. know, they have their own in-house alerting being emitted by their auto-log system, as well as the actual activity on the platform, right? So, you know, whatever auto-logging that they're building in-house might not be comprehensive to you as their customer, right? But, you know, you still get those signals from them to actually build on top of that. Also validate that their signals, right? I mean, you look at Workspace and Google, right? And how much they have, they're emitting out in their system.
Yeah, I think about Google Workspace alerts way too much because I get them every now and then. It's like 5 people reported spam. I'm like, man, that's such a bad alert. That's not telling me anything useful.
That's the pain of being a vendor-based detection system, right? You have to write things so generic. But, you know, if you provide that telemetry, allows your users to develop their own signals, right? And be a lot more customized to their use cases.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're working on? So, you know, I entered you as a chief architect. I mean, that's a super exciting role. Tell us a little bit about App Omni and what you're working on.
Yeah, so App Omni is a SaaS security posture management tool, most obviously focused on enterprise SaaS platforms. So where my team fits in is we're responsible for doing threat detection against basically all your SaaS auto-logging, you know, determining, you know, session hijacking, determining activity, exfiltration in all your different SaaS platforms, whether it's Salesforce, Workday, you know, Zendesk, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so for us, where we sit is looking exclusively at that telemetry, right? Trying to reason around SaaS auto-logging, SaaS detections, right? And which is for me, I think a brave new world in terms of, you know, detection overall across the enterprise, because I think most enterprise security teams or most security teams in general, you know, are focused on, I would say historically on endpoint and network, right? And breaching into SaaS world, especially over the last couple of years since, you know, coronavirus kind of forced a lot of people to go remote and being exposed to all these challenges around SaaS threat detection, right? SaaS is application level logging, which is a whole different beast from endpoint and network for sure, right? And you have different latencies, right? And you have different requirements and expectations that are coming from the SaaS vendor, right? As a user of their platforms, you're not really in control of what's being emitted, right? Like you can't go in and deploy something into their environment to emit more metrics like you can with an endpoint. So that's a different beast. It's a challenge. And for us, you know, that's where we're sitting. And that's, for me, it's, you know, how can we empower, you know, given those constraints, security teams to do threat detection in SaaS.
That's super interesting. I never thought about those challenges in that way. I mean, is there a huge difference in latency across the board? I never thought about that before.
I mean, yeah, most definitely, right? I mean, if you look at Salesforce, there's a subset of Salesforce auto logs that are what they consider real time, which, you know, was within a couple of minutes of which the event occurred. But there's a larger subset of those same auto logs or a different set of auto logs coming from their platform that are delayed by hours. You know, same concept existed in M365. You look at M365's documentation, at least with the management API, there could be hours to days with the latency. Same with Workspace. You know, their public documentation articulates hours to days of latency on their auto logs too, which is a whole different problem area when you try to do real-time detection, right? Like you try to lower that dwell time, but if your auto log sources are, you know, days behind, that's not great as a defender. So it's a varied beast. You also have challenges with extracting those auto logs because of API limits on these different platforms, right? You know, like if you're in Okta, your API can only make so many requests in a 60-second period, you know, and if your volume of event activity in Okta exceeds that, like you're consistently behind just dealing with API limits. So, you know, there's a lot of different challenges that don't necessarily exist on the network and endpoint side.
Yeah, that last one resonates on the network side, especially in cloud, because if you're using some type of streaming platform, so let's say you're collecting like network data into Kinesis, this is some stuff I did at like prior jobs. If that gets really, really high scale, then yeah, you have a latency problem. So I think that scale challenge certainly exists in the cloud. It's really, really interesting. When you're doing analysis, are these techniques predominantly real-time, or are you using a combination of real-time, batch, machine learning? Like, tell us a little bit about how you think about it and how others should think about it too.
Yeah, I mean, we think real-time. It's mostly a byproduct of wanting to minimize, like, there's already so much artificially induced latency coming from the SaaS vendor. And so for us, we wanted to minimize that latency as much as we possibly could once we received the event data, the telemetry. So for us, we really primarily focus on real time. We made a little bit inroads on batching, just on opportunities that don't really exist in doing the real time detection capabilities. And then obviously from an ML perspective for us, that's kind of a brave new world as well of, you know, introducing ML capabilities, ML, you know, essentially behavioral analytics on top of all this audit log data that's coming in. So yeah, that's where we mostly sit right now.
That makes a lot of sense. And then there's been a lot of interesting, I mean, I don't know. I think I can't do a podcast these days without talking about Gen AI. So let's talk about Gen AI.
All right.
I don't think it would really help with things like anomaly detection, but I think it would be really helpful for what we were talking about before, like generating graphs and looking at a lot of other interesting patterns in data. So like, tell me a little bit of how you've been thinking about applying Gen AI when it comes to detection and what's been working and what's been not really working that well with it.
Yeah. So for us, we tend to normalize all audit logs into a standard schema so that we can build detection on that instead of, you know, trying to write detection rules against, you know, 30 million different schemas that exist for all these different SaaS platforms. So we normalize it to a standard schema. We've tried to use Gen AI to basically articulate what our normalization patterns should look like within evaluating, you know, the inputs of the log schema as provided by the different providers and translating it into the statements that we would use in our DSL to translate those into a normalized schema. You know, we've had reasonably good success there. You know, there's still a lot of tweaking that needs to happen manually after that, but like it's as good as, you know, I would say GitHub Copilot finishing out your code statements, right? It's close enough. You know, you still gotta manage it. And then the other half of that for us is the additional content that gets put on top of the detection rules, right? It's one thing to sit there and alert on certain activity, right? But the other half of it is communicating to the end user, how do I triage this? How do I investigate this once you've alerted, right? And, you know, we could spend a ton of time documenting out how a specific alert would get triaged, right? But it's much quicker for Gen AI to kind of articulate that for us, especially since it's, you know, tends to be more aware of the Salesforce documentation or the Okta documentation of like, this is where you would go look in these systems. So for us, it's purely a content piece, which Gen AI allows us to iterate much quicker and put out that type of content.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, especially when it comes to particular TTPs. Like, for example, if you're like, oh, well, I'm looking for an admin created in Okta, right? Yeah. Or I'm looking for additional privileges assigned to something in Okta. I think what you called out on understanding the docs and then knowing how to remediate, that's super interesting. That's a really good use case.
Yeah. I also use Gen AI as a, when you get writer's block and, you know, just ask questions until like it unlocks, or it even, you know, sometimes I've had it hallucinate things that don't exist, but like it unlocked a different part of a way I didn't think about that allowed me to go and pivot a certain rule. But like, as it's applied to writing detections, I haven't seen much success, but like, I'm kind of optimistic in a future that like, as models iterate, as you start training models against, you know, auto log data, that there will be a capability in the future that might exist.
Yeah, it's interesting. The writer's block one makes a lot of sense. And I'd imagine it's helpful for any detection engineering team who's writing code, you know,
right?
Like training it on the other rules.
Yeah, most definitely.
Is that something you guys have experimented with?
A little bit, not as much as on the schema normalization piece. For us, it's, you know, certainly the next stage is like, all right, how can we, again, going kind of the GitHub Copilot route, how can we make this write rules quicker, right? How can we, you know, have it self realize, you know, what we're trying to do intent wise? You know, part of that, I think, could also lead into like, if you have the strategy frameworks written up front, applying the strategy framework as an input into the model and, you know, asks the question of like, all right, what would this rule look like, right? And it just sketches out an initial detection of what that detection might look like, given that, you know, that strategy framework.
Yeah.
And then just riffing off of that from that point forward. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And ADS is pretty extensive. And there's a lot of background context, and there's false positives, and there's like a lot of things to fill in. So we definitely want to be smarter than needing to sit there and fill in some highly structured markdown, you know?
Yes, definitely.
So speaking of normalization, have you been tracking OCSF?
I have. I'm a fan of the concept. It's been, you know, a couple months since I last looked at OCSF, but my initial gut reaction when it was first announced, it was basically where Elastic Common Schema was a couple of years ago. So I think, you know, between those two competing, I don't know if they're necessarily competing projects, right? But like, I think there's a lot of value there. So it's just like, how much is this project going to be adopted in the community, right? Obviously, I think Amazon is adopting it pretty heavily with their security data lake. Salesforce talks about it, but I haven't seen it customer facing wise. So I think it's just an internal thing for them. But like, I like the concept. For us, you know, from a SaaS perspective, it has its gaps. Elastic also has its gaps in terms of translating, you know, what happens on SaaS platforms into, you know, this normalized schemas. You know, we were dealing with ECS pretty comprehensively for the most of the last couple of years. We had to build extensions on top of ECS, you know, open a couple RFCs into the ECS repo to get a couple fields at it. So OCSF is definitely making quicker progress than I think ECS has over the last couple of years, but it's still got some maturing to go.
Yeah, for those listening, OCSF is Open Cybersecurity Schema Framework, and it's a modern open schema for cybersecurity.
Yeah, it's like CEF.
Yeah, but not 100 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, ECS, OCSF are similar in that regard, and Google Chronicle has one that's similar as well to OCSF.
Yeah.
So it's really just the effort to use one schema to make rule writing and response easier.
Yeah, it's like the golden outcome for any, I think, security team. I just don't think vendors are typically aligned to that, right? Everybody has their own form of trying to lock in on some way, and schema is one of those ways that makes it hard to translate or switch. So I would like to see it take off, but we'll see.
I'm hopeful, but there's so much difference in how security tools work.
Yes.
So it feels really difficult to say, oh, we're going to use the same schema for network telemetry as we are with CloudTrail, right? An application level log. It's just worlds of different. So
yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
That was our experience. Like I said, that was our experience with Elastic Common Schema when we tried to use it initially is, you know, just applying data that exists in SaaS auto logging into that schema initially was a rough challenge, right? And like I said, OCSF is kind of in that same place today still. So certainly has its good use cases today, but it's got to go a lot further.
Yeah. And you mentioned security data lake. I mean, have you been adopting data lakes for some time? I mean, I imagine you would have needed to work at a place like Salesforce and do DNR. Like, you probably have to have some big data strategy. So can you talk to us a little bit of your experience there?
Yeah. You know, we've used Hadoop and we've used BigQuery as kind of our data lakes. And I think they are tremendous assets to do a DNR. The ingest rates are just, you know, far exceed like what most SIEMs are capable of. Not having to worry about indexing so much, right? Like just being not having to worry about auto log size is the big winner, right? Especially when you start looking at some of these auto logs from some of the vendors that we're dealing with, you know, like GitHub or Salesforce, their auto logs could be measured in megabytes in size for a single log line, right? And it's just like no SIEM will ingest a 1 meg single log line auto log, right, without fracturing it. So from a data lake perspective, it'll take that all day long, right? And, you know, storage is so much significantly cheaper, and just being able to query, which allows us to retain far more data, right, for far longer, and then be able to query across it practically in a reasonable time frame, unlocks so much capabilities from a DNR perspective, and certainly from a detection engineering perspective, right? Just being able to articulate your detection concepts into a query and then figure out like how noisy is this potentially going to be before you ever deploy anything is, you know, such a power up.
How far back are you typically looking when you're doing that?
For me, we go about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You want really high confidence. That's not going to be noisy.
Yeah, I mean, usage patterns and SaaS platforms could change pretty dramatically depending on, you know, the platform, depending on what's been scaled out, right? How customers have, you know, scaled up their own operations on the SaaS platform. So, you know, you have certain customers that roll out like a Salesforce community site that is a support portal, and its initial use today is, you know, essentially non-existent, but 6 months from now is a ton more users, ton more activity. And, you know, you just kind of have to have that historical look, because something that's not noisy today will be 6 months from now. So if you have that look back period, allows you to kind of just prejudge what might be happening, right? You kind of get a feel for how things are progressing.
Yeah. And then in terms of tuning, what's your strategy for keeping the quality high? Because it's one thing to check it at a point in time, and then, you know, it's another thing to make sure it stays low.
Yeah. Consistent validation, right? Automating, you know, and this could shift in a variety of different ways, right? But certainly, like, any attempt to automate the triggering of the detections to figure out, you know, are they still working? Are they working the way that we intended, right? Which goes back to the strategy framework, right? Because shifts in schema, shifts in, you know, TTPs can kind of drive, you know, is this rule even doing what it was intended to do originally? You know, shifts in personnel, right? Like, evaluating the rule later on, right? What was the original author's intent if they're no longer here, right? Going back to that strategy framework. So, you know, being able to continuously validate, writing, you know, unit tests for the rule itself, being able to use something like Atomic Red Team to go out and actually, you know, trigger the activity that would emit the signals that you're looking for, are massive benefits to a detection engineering team, right? Again, right? Like, we have CI/CD on, you know, your typical engineering teams, the same concept should apply to a detection engineering team. You should constantly be testing, you know, constantly have essentially a QA team responsible for testing your detection capabilities.
Like software.
Yeah. I mean, it is, right? Like,
it is software. Yeah.
Yeah. It's software. It's just written slightly differently.
Yeah. The test cases are so key, right? Just to preserve what you were saying in original intent, and then also protecting against regression, because we don't want our detections to stray from, you know, the initial purpose. And as you develop and add more false positive cases, you know, you just want to make sure that things stay stable. So that's certainly one way to get
there. Yeah, I mean, I've certainly seen detections that have strayed from the path just because they've gotten tuned so much over the years that, you know, what they are now triggering on or targeting today was not what the intent was, you know, 2 years ago when the rule was originally written. So, yeah, like, you gotta stay true to that path, right? And also, you know, if you take the layered approach, right, like, you don't want your layers shifting underneath of you. So you still gotta have those clear concepts laid out front.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Drew, I really enjoyed this conversation. I was hoping you can leave us with three pieces of advice for other detection engineers and leaders listening in.
Yeah, I think the first one is have a plan and make it measurable. When it comes to detection engineering, you know, whether your initial plan is cover all the TTPs and MITRE ATT&CK, or, you know, tackle all these different threat and intel indicators that are coming in from your intel team, right? It's just having a plan, right? Because I think, like I said, historically, I think in my experience, prior to the core concept of the detection engineering teams, detection engineering has been very ad hoc, which makes it hard to have a plan. The next one is, again, going back to detections can be layered, right? Detection at depth is a thing. Strive for it. You'll minimize your impacts to your coverage, especially if you make coverage your plan. It will massively boost up your capabilities, right? You don't have to, you're less worried, you're less stressed about missing an attack or, you know, missing something because you have multiple indicator or multiple signals coming in that will alert you to the activity, right? And then kind of hitting on our last point, right? Continuously validating your detection capabilities, right? TTPs change, sources change, schemas change, all these things can change and shift underneath of you, right? If you're continuously validating, you will catch those early and be able to mitigate and minimize the impact that they have, right? And again, you know, if you're doing detection at depth, it's not that worth, it's not a big situation if those things do change, because you still have a good outcome.
Awesome, Drew. Those are great pieces of advice, and I hope it's really helpful for those listening in.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for the time, and we will catch y'all next time. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Detection at Scale podcast brought to you by Panther Labs. For access to the latest episodes, please visit our website at www.runpanther.io/podcast. And for those interested in running Panther, head to our website, runpanther.io, to sign up for a free trial. You'll get a dedicated instance with the ability to analyze your security logs in real time at any scale powered by Detections as Code and sending into a very robust security data lake. Our goal is to make detection and response easy, scalable, and fast for you, the practitioner. Thanks. See you again next time.